You are listening to Proactive Physio Podcast, episode number 1 with your host, Jaimin. A podcast helps you to improve your clinical skills as well as the patient's outcomes. Hey, welcome back to Proactive Physio Podcast. In podcast, we talk to the leaders in musculoskeletal injury, sports injury management, as well as the pain science specialist. In today's podcast, you will learn about the understanding causes of injury, how injury differs with different patients group, and also recent current review regarding the assessment and the rehabilitation protocol for the shoulder joint. In today's podcast, we have a guest, Dr. Ian Horsley from UK. He is with English Rugby Union for 14 years. He finished his PhD in 2013 for the various kind of shoulder injury subject. So today he will share us about the great knowledge regarding the kinetic chain for the shoulder joint. Sir, tell me about where you are working and where you stay.
I have two jobs currently. I work for the English Institute of Sport. I am the upper limb physiotherapy lead. So the English Institute of Sports provides sports services, which includes physiotherapy and sports medicine, to the majority of our Olympic and Paralympic athletes. And in addition to that, we also have some input to netball and also to squash. And that takes up part of my week. And then the other part of my week, I'm a clinical director of a physiotherapy practice in the north of England called Back in Action Rehabilitation.
Okay, that's nice. Nice, sir. Nice to meet you. Okay. I have read about your article recently. You have published in 2020 January. It's a fantastic principle of shoulder rehabilitation. So can you tell us about brief of the paper?
I've spent a career, most of my career was working with an upper limb sport. I worked with rugby in the UK for many years, and culminated in working with the England national team at a level. And that sparked my sort of interest in the shoulder. And more importantly, when I was working within rugby union, trying to mitigate the injuries, it was one of the most popular injuries for when we looked at an injury audit from 2003 done by the England Rugby Union. It was in the top three injuries for time loss away from the sport. And so the thing that pricked my conscience more than anything else was it was also had a high recurrence rate, and then that led me into research around the shoulder, ultimately culminating with me doing a PhD, which I completed in 2013, which reported some other possible causative factors that needed to be investigated a little bit further around the shoulder when looking at the shoulder. Most of the injuries that occur around the upper limb in the shoulder in rugby is during contact, and the biggest part of the contact, which is a main part of the game, is the tackle, where you put your shoulder against somebody a big guy who's running quite fast in front of you. So hence a lot of traumatic problems around the shoulder. Obviously you can't avoid trauma, but we can try and sort of mitigate those risks by understanding what goes on better around the shoulder in rugby. And then since I left working with rugby, I've moved across, as I say, working with our Olympic and Paralympic sport, and now have to do and working on trying to mitigate the risk of shoulder injuries through all the sports.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, sir. So we'll move on the topic about the kinetic chain rehabilitation for the shoulder elevation. So, sir, please tell us about something.
Okay, so yeah, we know that shoulder injuries are really, really common both within sports but outside sport as well. And as I mentioned previously, from when I worked in rugby, across sports and out of sports, they tend to have high recurrence rates. So when we think about the shoulder joint, the glenohumeral joint, we know it's an incredible joint. Unlike its lower limb counterpart, the hip joint, it has little bony stability. The hip joint's got a deep cup in the acetabulum for the humeral head to articulate with, and hence, you know, it's a typical ball and socket joint. But when we look at the shoulder joint, the glenohumeral joint, the humeral head articulates with an almost flat surface on the glenoid of the scapula. Okay, so it's less of a ball and socket and more of a ball and saucer joint. So this sort of anatomical configuration affords the shoulder joint a great range of mobility, which is really, really useful in everyday life and certainly within a sporting context, but little bony stability. The stability is maintained mainly by the neuromuscular control around there of their scapula and their rotator cuff muscles and getting the timing right to maintain the humeral head within the center of the glenoid.
True. So if an athlete comes to our clinic with a shoulder pain with a history of 2 months, how do we approach?
And so it's really, you know, whether it's an athlete or a non-athlete, he's trying to understand the movement that causes their pain. Now, sort of Linda Joy Lee and Diane Lee, they talk, when they talk about the lumbar spine and pelvis, they talk about meaningful task analysis. And I think that's really, really good, whatever part of the body that you're looking at, that you need to find out specifically what is the movement that we're doing. So in everyday activities, you know, sort of, you know, it could be getting dressed, putting your coat on, trying to get your hand behind your back, fastening your, you know, tucking your shirt in, fastening your bra, or lifting a cup or out of a cupboard. But within sport, there's some very specific movement patterns that are required to carry out a sport. Okay, so we need to try and analyze that, and we need to try and replicate that when we're assessing them within clinic, which sometimes is very, very difficult when you're looking at a sport, when you think that, you know, in throwing sports, and the ultimate throwing sport that's talked about is baseball, where the rotation speed of the arm into internal rotation is around 9,000 degrees per second. You know, it's very, very difficult to replicate that within a clinical setting. So the most important thing is trying to find out the mechanism, so their movement pattern, and again, can they understand any reason that may have started to cause that shoulder pain? So have they tried something different? Had they trained for longer? Had they been fatigued? Had they trained on consecutive days? So again, see if the athlete or the patient can give you any ideas of what their understanding of what they think might be responsible for some of the shoulder pain.
Oh, that's good. So I think you are mostly focusing on the movement perspective. Let's an example, if the baseball pitchers come, so you analyze his movement pattern, and accordingly, you go for the assessment part, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And again, we're looking to make sure that we're trying to reproduce their pain. Okay, not just any pain. And it generally, you know, the two reasons that people tend to present for treatment is the most prominent one is because they get pain when they do a movement, or the second thing is that they have an inability to do that movement, either through weakness, inhibition, or stiffness. And if they are moving, one of the most important things that I think is looking at the quality of that movement as well.
Okay, that's good. And how do you differentiate the causes of shoulder injury from the athletic population and a general population?
Okay, so the easy ones to deal with are when it's a traumatic injury. Okay, so if they've got a traumatic injury, if it's, you know, generally a fall onto an outstretched hand, or a fall onto a shoulder, or you know, running into something, then we've got a mechanism and that is fine, and we can deal with the consequences of that. It's more of a problem if when something has no clear mechanism, you know, it's one of these things, it just happens. And then we've got to start to do a little bit of a detective work in trying to work out why suddenly, which was a healthy, pain-free, fully functioning shoulder, we've now got a painful shoulder that's not fit for function.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. So when the patient comes with a shoulder pain, so in your current practice, how do you rehabilitate for the shoulder pain?
Okay, so again, and I'm talking from some, you know, personal experience and how I manage things. I look to see if I can change their symptoms. So as I spoke about earlier, the meaningful task, getting to carry out a specific movement that brings on their pain. We will get them to record the level of pain just using a visual analog scale. So out of 10, they will record that. I will look at the movement pattern and the quality of that movement. So we know that, you know, to get into elevation, you've got about 180 degrees of elevation around your shoulder girdle. 60 degrees of that is scapular upward rotation. 120 degrees is humeral abduction. So together we should have about 2 degrees of humeral movement elevation for every 1 degree of scapular upward rotation. So I will look at that. Does that look right? And also, does that movement look effortless? And if they've got pain, it never looks effortless. Are they cheating? Have they got some compensating patterns? You know, do they shrug their shoulder? Do they use a little bit of momentum to get their arm up there? And then what I will do is, as I say, see if I can sort of, certainly if it's pain related, try and reduce their pain and possibly abolish that pain. And a great thing that I use a lot is the shoulder symptom modification procedure that was sort of purported by Jeremy Lewis a while ago from there, where we look at assisting movements of the scapula and seeing what their output is to our meaningful task, or by trying to influence the position of the humeral head within the glenoid. And then outside that, we can look at the effect of cervical spine position and thoracic spine position on the outcome. And if we can moderate that or abolish that, then it gives us an indication of where we need to use our rehab. So let's say we assist the scapula going up into elevation. So we should get 60 degrees of scapular upward rotation. And when we look at that, that should mean that the inferior angle of the scapula should come into the midline of the axilla, roughly from there. And so if we can assist that scapula getting into there and get the timing right, and we can abolish that patient's pain, we could say then, okay, your problem, it looks like it's a lack of scapular upward rotation. And then our secondary test will be, why aren't we getting scapular upward rotation? And again, from some of Ann Cool's sort of algorithm, it's generally that we some tissues lack extensibility. So we could say some things are too tight, and then some muscles are not producing optimal force. So we could say something is weak. So that will be our secondary test.
Okay, fine. And sir, what about the thoracic mobility and the lumbopelvic hip complex for your kinetic chain approach?
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, certainly for about thoracic mobility. So we know that as the arm goes into elevation, I've talked about the scapula upwardly rotating. So in that frontal, in that coronal plane, the inferior angle of the scapula moves away from the thoracic spine, so laterally. We also get, towards the end of elevation, we get posterior tilt of the scapula, so the inferior angle of the scapula moves towards the chest wall. And we also get external rotation of the scapula, so the medial border of the scapula moves towards the chest wall as well. Now, those movements can only occur if the thoracic spine underneath has mobility. So if the thoracic spine can extend to allow some posterior tilt of the scapula. Also, does the thoracic spine rotate to allow that external rotation of the scapula as well. So that's really important. And then with regard to the lumbar pelvic complex, we've got to think about the, as I say, that's why it's important about the meaningful task. If they're getting problems when they are, reaching when they're sat down at work, okay, then we should be considering that their assessment in a sitting position. Whereas if they get their pain when they're standing, we need to assess them in a standing position. And then, so then we need to think about, and this is where the kinetic chain is important. If somebody is standing, okay, we need to think of all the joints from the floor, okay, up until we get to the shoulder girdle, and what the requirements are of those joints.
Okay, so fine. So as you said about, you are assessing from his occupational perspective, if the patient has a standing kind of job.
Yes.
Fine. And how much do you give the importance for the lower limb trunk as well as the shoulder to generate a force to complete the throwing task?
Oh, it's massive. There's been lots of things spoken, certainly from a sporting context, because we know that the distal components have an influence on their local function, and so we need to look at that. So if we've got lack of movement or lack of stability in their more distal components further down the kinetic chain, then that can have an influence on the local system from there, because their scapula acts as a link between the lower limbs and their trunk, really.
You have listened a great information about shoulder joint. We have a free article, research paper and its clinical implication on our website. You can register on proactivephysioknowledge.com/register. And you can also access our Instagram page @proactive_physioknowledge. Now it's time to dive into the podcast.
So as we discuss about the importance of thoracic mobility and lumbopelvic hip complex, but what type of test do you use to assess the thoracic mobility and lumbopelvic hip complex?
So one of the tests, and again, I'm a little bit biased because of where I work, and there was a nice paper done by one of our sports, which was done by a few of our physios who work with British Gymnastic, and they looked at what is generally called the locked lumbar position. So it's almost as if you kneel on the floor and sit on your heels and almost go into a child's pose position. Place one elbow on the floor, in line with your leg, with the elbow resting on your knee, in front of your knee, and then you put the other hand behind your head, so it's out at a right angle, so your elbow's bent behind your head. And then we used an iPhone, used an inclinometer on an iPhone, and you get the subject to rotate, so they keep their arm that's on the knee still, and they rotate through there. And that's found a really, really good, reliable way of assessing that spinal rotation, and to be more sort of specific about it, because the thoracic spine is not really locked from there. So they tend to call that, we tend to call it a heel sit position. So that's nice for thoracic rotation. Thoracic extension, there's a nice one that's been used in swimming and in cricket called the combined elevation test. And that involves your patient laying prone with their arms stretched out in front of them. So their head will be rested on the floor or on the couch with their arms straight out, so they'll be above the head, with their dominant hand resting on top of the non-dominant hand, and then keeping their forehead and chin in contact with the bed or with the floor. You ask them to keep their elbow straight, to lift their arms up off the off the floor or bed, and you measure the distance between the ulnar styloid and the bed.
So, do you prefer a single leg stance position to assess the kinetic chain disturbance in the shoulder joint?
Okay, so again, talking a little bit about some of the work that we've done before. So at Salford University, where I'm an associate lecturer, a while ago, we came up with a nice little screening test, which we use for anterior cruciate ligament. But it's a really, really good screening tool to evaluate the lumbar pelvic area and the lower limbs. And this test is called the qualitative analysis of single leg loading there. And it will involve variations, okay, of single leg work. So initial stance is just stand on one leg, and what happens is you have 10 parameters that you visually assess looking from the floor up until an arm strategy. So we stand them on one leg, and simple things, whether they get a pelvic drop, whether they get a Trendelenburg, or whether they get a change in their lumbar pelvic position with an anterior pelvic tilt. Then we can look at them from that position. If they can manage, can they do a mini squat? Can they squat about 40 degrees on one leg? And we look, do the hip, knee and ankle keep in alignment? Is there loss of balance? Is there trunk sway? And what happens is it's a sort of a dichotomous system where you get one or naught. So if you see any of these variations or cheats, then you score one. And if they don't have that, they score naught. And at the end, you'll do a left leg and a right leg, and you'll get a score out of 10. Obviously, naught is a perfect score. 10 is a terrible score. And you can move that on. Then we can do a step down test off a 30 centimeter step, a step across step, and then we can go into hopping and jumping and bounding. So we can move that on to the level of the person we're dealing with, and that's shown to have some great reliability. And so though it was designed for ACL, it's great. It's a great assessment that needs minimum equipment to use for looking at the lumbar pelvic area.
Oh, that's good. So, sir, till now we have discussed about the test and how the glenohumeral joint works for the kinetic chain. Now, sir, tell us about the rehabilitation part. What is the first exercise that you decide for rehabilitation for the shoulder joint? Do you think that taping is important for initial stage, or what sort of exercise you prefer?
Okay. Again, my first thing is I don't believe you should be carrying out any rehabilitation around the shoulder if you're getting pain when you do that. And the only caveat to that is if you are sure you have got a tendinopathy, okay, and the pain that you get is because you're just loading a dysfunctional tendon, then that is okay. That's been shown in the lower limb that if you do an isometric hold, about 85% of your maximum force for about 45 minutes, no, 45 seconds, sorry, not 45 minutes, 45 seconds. I've repeated five times, and then that isometric contraction will get rid of the pain. So as long as you know that you're not creating physical impingement, then that's fine. But otherwise, I want anything I do to be pain-free. And we've got to look at the component parts, and the component parts are going to be, have we got full scapular control? Have we got full humeral control? And depending on what I'm looking at, then four-point kneeling is generally a really, really good place to start. So in four-point kneeling, you're weight-bearing through your arms and you're getting concavity compression. That tends to stimulate the cuff to work. So that's good because we want the cuff to work. We can also start to think about working of the muscles that stabilize the scapula on the chest wall. So ostensibly serratus anterior and lower trapezius. And since that we're talking about the kinetic chain in that position, we then can start to incorporate the kinetic chain to try and influence the local muscles around the scapula. So if we're in 4-point kneeling, so in hands and knees, so hands directly under the shoulders, knees directly under the hips, a nice neutral spine, nice back, not too much of a kyphosis, looking straight down, head in line with shoulders, and then we get the patient to extend their leg on the side where they've got pain, then EMG studies have shown that that influences serratus anterior. So you can get a little bit more activity through serratus anterior.
That's a good sign, because 4-point kneeling usually we refer in a later stage of the shoulder rehabilitation. So as far as you told about the 4-point kneeling exercise, the scapular control and the glenohumeral control, that has to be there before going for the strengthening exercise.
Yeah, it could. I think again, and it's a bugbear of mine, and you know, some people don't agree and argue with me with it, but I'm not a big fan of talking about strengthening around the shoulder, because you know this whole thing that the shoulder joint strength comes from the kinetic chain. So we know that force production that comes from the shoulder. So let's say throwing a baseball at 90 miles an hour and at 9,000 degrees a second. That cumulative force is 50% comes from the waist down, 30% comes from the trunk, and only 20% of that force comes locally from the shoulder girdle. So if we just concentrate on thinking about getting strength of the shoulder girdle on its own, and we don't address the other 80%, we are doomed to failure, and we see this a lot. So I more want to get muscle activation more than anything else.
Okay, fine. So that's a good. So I think strengthening part, rather than doing a strengthening exercise, we should concentrate on activate those muscles from the kinetic chain itself. And yeah. And what about the return to sports criteria for the shoulder joint?
So the easy bits for that. So we for lower limb, there are lots and lots of things you can do. So you can do squats, and you can do leg press, and you can do deadlifts. You can really work on muscle recruitment and engagement. You can do bridging for the low limb. And when we think about the trunk from there, there's all sorts of maneuvers, variations of the bridge or dynamic sit-ups that we can work on getting that recruitment and control around the trunk. But the return to playing sport is you've got to make your return match the criteria that is needed for that sport. So the position, you need to try and replicate the positions that the athlete gets into. So the speeds that they move at, and the positions and the frequency from there. And it's really, really difficult, because you know different sports require different things. The shoulder is expected to do different things, and within the same sport, different positions within that sport will require different movement patterns. So by being a general saying this is what you need, but basically it's like you would for anything else. You need through range control, both concentric and eccentric strength around your shoulder girdle. You need the full range of motion, which is generally equal to the opposite side. But again, you know, we know in overhead athletes like tennis players that there's a significant increase in external rotation at 90 degrees abduction, and a concomitant decrease in internal rotation at 90 degrees abduction on their dominant side, similarly in throwing sports. So again, you need to know about the sports and the requirements of the ranges and sort of strength and power. Now I'm really lucky working in elite sport, because we've got baseline data on all our athletes. So we've got something to work before that we can say, we know, let's say if we use some of the tests that are out there, there's some nice simple tests like the closed kinetic chain upper extremity stability test, where you're in a press-up position with your hands on two markers 36 inches apart, and then you 15 seconds you have to move, take one hand and touch the top of the other hand, replace it back on the tape, and then reverse that, and you count the number of touches within a 15 second period. We give 45 seconds rest, repeat that three times. Again, we can take the average of that as a marker, so we can get some baseline numbers from there, and that will tell us how near we are from that. If you're seeing somebody for the first time, if you look, there's some generalized data out there for, you know, non-sporting and less sedentary populations. But again, you can use them as markers. If somebody's got a really low score, okay, you're looking to see if they're getting any better. But ultimately, you want to be taking them back into their sport and moving at their pace and using the forces that they require without getting any pain at the time, making sure that their quality of movement is correct and that their shoulder, in this case, is fit for purpose.
Yeah. So, sir, you have given a fantastic information about regarding kinetic chain rehabilitation for the shoulder elevation. So just tell us about what is your about your recent project that I saw on your website, on a research gate, that you are working for the proper measurement production for the assessing tools for the shoulder joint. Just give us a brief explanation. What about the project is?
So one of the things that again we've been looking at tools to assess the upper limb. So we need tools that don't require a lot of technical equipment, so low expense, and that don't take a lot of time to administer. So over the last few years, I've been involved in a couple of research projects looking at grip strength and what grip strength tells us about the shoulder. And so from, I think it was 2000, and I can't think, about 14, I think we did a paper looking at grip strength and how did that correlate with the strength of the posterior cuff, so external rotation strength. And we looked at, so we use a hand grip dynamometer. So we started with a conventional position, which is the arm by the side, the elbow bent to 90 degrees, with the forearm in mid position, so the thumb is pointing upwards. Okay, and we get them to a maximum squeeze for 3 seconds. That's first position. Then we maintain the elbow position and bring the arm out to 90 degrees abduction, so the arm will be pointing straight forward. And then finally, we tested going from that position into full external rotation, so the arm's pointing up to the ceiling. So those three positions, and then we tested the strength of the external rotators in those three positions, and we got some extremely good correlation. So, you know, not quite perfect, but some of them were, you know, were up 0.9, 0.8 in those positions. So we know that grip strength gives us a window to what's going on with the rotator cuff, and as I said earlier on, it's about getting control and getting recruitment of the muscle. So that's quite good, and we've done a couple of studies around there to look and see whether from an EMG side of things whether we get that. Okay, and then as a part of an MSc project that one of our students did, that was looking at assessing force production in the upper limb. So we know in the lower limb to assess force production, and the counter movement jump, single leg counter movement jump, it is seen as a really useful method of looking at force production and energy leaking through the lower limb. So we had an MSc student, Gemma Parry, who we developed a sort of a counter movement press up using two force plates, one under each hand. Again, just as you would in a counter movement jump, starting at the bottom of a press up position. On a given time, they just go push as hard as they can, get as high as it can and they land, and we use them the same metrics that you would do for a counter movement jump. And again, that was found to be reliable. So that the reliability study of that paper, although it was only came out at the end of last year, it took a long time to get published, so it was accepted about two years ago from this. So that's a nice paper.
Yeah, that was really, really good, interesting information that you gave. Now, just sort of tell me from where, how we can reach to you on the social media.
Oh, okay, right. So, so I'm not very technological, but I do have a Twitter account, and I've had a Twitter account for probably eight years now. And that's where I'm most easily reached. So my Twitter account is through was originally through my practice, but it's mine now, and it's at back, so BACK underscore in underscore action. So my clinic is called Back in Action. So it's at back underscore in underscore action, and that's probably the best way to reach me. I answer virtually well everybody who contacts me through Twitter, and then if we need to, then we can swap email addresses from there. It's easy to get on.
So, sir, thank you so much for giving some fantastic and good information regarding kinetic chain rehabilitation for the shoulder elevation.
Thank you for listening Proactive Physio Podcast. Be sure to visit our website proactivephysioknowledge.com and discover fantastic articles on various joints and its clinical implication. If you like our podcast, give us a feedback. Our next podcast is about soft tissue injury and how the adhesion occurs and its management. And you will understand about the rehabilitation protocol. Have a nice weekend. See you.